All right, as we talk baseball with you on a Saturday night, we're joined by Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter and, of course, of Sports Info Solutions. Mark always has some interesting insights into baseball. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm healthy and just sitting at home watching movies and playing on my computer. That's about all you can do at this point.
Well, we wish you happy holidays as well and glad that things are okay with you. Yep. As we enjoy it, look, we look forward to these segments with you very much. You always come up with some interesting things. So on KMBR this weekend, we played the Giants wild card game of 2014. Giants-Pirates, Brandon Crawford, big game for him. Bumgarner, Edinson Volquez on the other side. Pittsburgh went to win the division and couldn't get it done and ended up taking on the Giants, and Volquez pitched the game. But your thoughts about that Giants wild card game 2014?
All right, so a few things that were looked up for that. Crawford had only hit two home runs in his previous 60 games, but isn't it always the way for the Giants in the postseason in the even number of years that someone who hadn't done something in forever or someone who is an unlikely hero stepped up and came up with the big moment? That would be one. Madison Bumgarner that day, I didn't rewatch the game, but either he was really on or the home plate umpire was a little helpful to him because his fastball got a lot of called strikes with it, 20 out of 36, which is a very good ratio for a pitcher. You don't typically get strike calls on more than half of your pitches in general. Fastballs maybe a little bit more than others. But that day, he retired 15 batters with the fastball and did allow a hit with it, which I think is pretty good. And he was topping out. He was averaging 93 that day, so the fastball was pretty good for him. Curveball, 10 of 13 for strikes, and I think my favorite of these, 8 misses on 10 swings. So they took 10 swings against his curveball, and they missed on 8 of them. And that was the pitch of the day for him. That was the pitch that allowed him to pitch a shutout, essentially.
You know, it's amazing when we do these things with Mark Simon, Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter. You always come up with gems, and what strikes me is the pitcher is like having one of his best days ever. Isn't it amazing when, you know, of course, you could see it, you could feel it, but then to see the raw numbers, it's really something to behold.
Yeah, well, it's no coincidence that you've picked the games that have been, like, the best ever. So it's a little easier to find the needles in the haystacks when you do that. But, yeah, that's if you were going to put a list together for Bumgarner, that game would certainly be near the top.
All right. So Crawford, it's a home run, hadn't hit, what, two homers in 60 games. Do we know if he hit a fastball? Because I remember the slam. He crushed it.
Oh, I don't have that in front of me, but that's one we're going to come up a little short.
Yep. I remember it. There was no doubt about it when he hit it, and it quieted the big crowd down, and that was the big part of that. That Pittsburgh crowd was wild that night,
What I'm going to do now is we're going to talk for another 5 minutes or so, and I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to look something up while we're talking,
right.
And I will get you an answer by the end of the interview.
All right. Multitask, Mark A. Simon says. All right. Let's go to Travis Ishikawa. He wins the pennant. Giants win the pennant with a big 3-run homer, bottom of the ninth off of Waka. It was an inning that was getting away from the Cardinals. Mike Morse had tied it up with the big homer off Neshek in the eighth inning, but I knew the Giants had that game won. I didn't know it was going to be a home run, but Ishikawa certainly capped off what was an annihilation of the Cardinals, really.
So my favorite thing about that is I Googled it. I was looking for, like, what the media reports were the day that he came back to the Giants, because he actually started the season with the Pirates and didn't last long. He was only there for a couple of weeks. And when the Giants re-signed him to a minor league deal, Grant Brisby, now of The Athletic, then of McCovey Chronicles blog, wrote, "Hopefully, we'll never see him in a Giants uniform again, because that will have meant something went seriously wrong with the major league roster." So much
I
for
guess
that.
It did. Yes.
Yes, it all worked out quite all right for Travis Ishikawa, who
played in left field
postseason games.
Come on, they put him in left field. How about that?
Yeah, Yeah, and like he was a first baseman, and that was the whole thing that Grant was, I think, taking into account. There was, it wasn't like he was going to displace Belt, but they were able to find the spot in the outfield for him. By the way, the pitch that Brandon Crawford hit out to Middleton Volquez was a slider.
Ah, okay.
I just watched it.
Very good. Okay, we'll clear that up. Very good. Hey, you had a lot of fun this week, and I know you published it, your defensive blog, as I was included in it. You know, the great defensive players that we saw personally. Tell us how that came out. Give me a couple of examples.
So I asked the question, who's the best defensive player you ever saw? It's 25 or so people. Former players, got a couple of them. Preston Wilson was one. Ron Darling was another, broadcast now. And then I asked to play-by-play guys and to just media people. You were the oldest of the group. And it in hindsight, I should have gone for some people that were, I guess, in between my age and your age, because we were missing Brooks Robinson. We were missing a couple of other notable ones. I liked your Luis Aparicio choice. That was one of the highlights of this. A lot of people saying Andrew Jones, a lot of people saying Ozzie Smith. A couple that I liked, there was a player, CJ Nitkowski picked Kim Barte, who was a cup of coffee guy who played like six seasons, who was incredibly fast in the outfield and made a number of incredible catches that Nitkowski happened to see in person. So I thought that was a really good one. Ron Darling picked a former Giant, as a matter of fact, from his minor league days, Tom O'Malley, the former third baseman for the Giants in the early 80s. He said that the reason that he picked him was because the first minor league game he ever saw, he said that Tom O'Malley looked like basically like Brooks Robinson and was incredible at third base. So there were a lot of good responses to that. SportsInfoSolutionsBlog.com. One other thing on Brandon Crawford, by the way. He was terrible that year at hitting pitches that darted inside, I guess it could go either way, lefty or righty. But he was terrible that year against sliders. He was terrible that year against cutters, pitches with the sharp breaks to them with a little bit of velocity. So just going back to that, look that up while we were talking. It was an incredibly unlikely home run.
Great insight. Great insight, as always. I enjoyed watching the 75 World Series and the playoffs on TV this week with MLB.com and MLB TV. And I saw Louis Tiant. Now, of course, I think of Johnny Cueto, but I'll tell you, you know, I don't know why he's not in the Hall of Fame. He was one of the great pitchers of all time. Did you get the chance to look up anything or get a feel for Louis Tiant?
Sure. That's someone who is on the very edges of my baseball fandom. I caught him at the very end when he retired in 1982, and I remember people making a big deal out of that. He actually retired after six games with the Angels. His end of career, he had a fade where he faded with the Pirates and the Angels. But, so there's a couple of things with Tiant that are really interesting. One is that in 1968 – which predates 75 considerably, when he was a younger pitcher, 27 years old, he was dominant, as most guys were, but dominant at the highest level. He led the American League in ERA that year, the year that Bob Gibson had the 1.12 and Danny McLean won the 31 games. He had a 1.60 ERA. Flash forward to 75, the thing that got me, you don't see this now. Louis Tiant pitched 25 innings in the World Series. Nobody's doing that now. He had three starts in the World Series that year. Games started six because of the rain situation that postponed the World Series quite a bit that year. Three starts of seven innings. The only guy to do that since in the World Series is Schilling, 2001. And Louis Tiant also went nine in the ALCS. 155 pitches in game four of the World Series. Some accounts say 163. Either way, ridiculous. Fascinating because of the Cueto-esque approach, or I guess Cueto has the Tiant-esque approach, but very, very, very good pitcher, 229 career wins, 3.30 ERA, a good, modern metrics, wins above replacement guy who's kind of like a fringe Hall of Fame candidate to the statistical community, I guess, so to speak. I don't know that your thoughts are necessarily far-fetched. He had, when he was going for the Hall of Fame, he had like a small but very loyal group of support. And looking at the support right now, he had like 12%, 18%, 15%. Those were his numbers typically for Hall of Fame.
Mm. Well, in my opinion, in watching him, he was one of the best that I had ever seen when he was on, and he was on more than that. All right, that's Louis Tion. Al Kaline passed away this week. Al Kaline's statue at Comerica Park is a statue of a defensive play. I remember a play he made on a Saturday afternoon game of the week against the Yankees where he broke his collarbone, and basically the Tigers fell out of the race after that. But Al Kaline, a tremendous player, Mr. Tiger, what did you come up with on him?
So I was watching, you were talking about watching games on MLB Network, and I was doing something and watching game six of the 68 World Series at kind of the same time. And you're right about the defense. He made a running catch in the right field corner that was very impressive. It wasn't necessarily tied to the game. The game was a blowout. The Tigers won easily. But you got to feel like, for someone like me, who obviously never saw him live, you got a pretty good feel for his defense in a play or two. And I thought that that was kind of cool. He won 10 gold gloves, 399 home runs. I think I want to say the number of guys who won 10 gold gloves in the outfield is like five. And it's like Mays, Clemente, Ichiro, that class of guy. He hit 399 home runs, never hit 30 in a season. It was just a lot of years of very good, where he would be like 29, 27, 29, 25. The other thing with him, I think that's important, like with my era being a mid-40-year-old person, like Dale Murphy is a really good player to me, who I've often thought was like Hall of Fame worthy. And he has this terrible fade at the end of his career that just kind of wrecks him. Al Kaline's fade was a pretty good fade. Even in the years where he was older and not necessarily as good, he was still able to put up decent enough numbers in his decline that made him a useful player. He was only a below average offensive player once in the last 20 years of his career. So he was Mr. Tiger, face of the franchise, represented the team incredibly well. Inducted to the Hall of Fame, rightfully so, in 1980. Unfortunately, passed away at age 85.
Yeah, 3,000 hits or more, and a very special guy. And the thing about him that I'll always remember, in 1968, when the Tigers won the World Series, he was out for part of the year, and they finally brought him back in. He didn't get a lot of playing time. But Mayo Smith, manager, said Kaline is in the lineup. And to do that, they had to put the center fielder, Mickey Stanley, at shortstop and take Ray Oyler out, who couldn't hit a lick, and they put Mickey Stanley in at shortstop just to get Kaline in the lineup. So this is the World Series we're talking about. They took the center fielder, made him a shortstop to get Kaline in the lineup. How about that?
And Kaline rewarded them by hitting 379 with 8 RBIs in 7 games, so that's pretty good. I want to bring up one other point, too. For those people that don't necessarily buy into the advanced metrics a lot, there are advanced metrics for defense before, like, the ones that our company devised, and they start in the mid-50s, and they kind of work their way forward. And the top three players in terms of overall in right field in those advanced defensive metrics are Clemente, Kaline, and then more modern, Jesse Barfield. And I think that's a pretty good list. And I think that tells you that these advanced metrics, they match up with the eye test pretty well.
Very good. Barfield, great arm. I remember that for him as well. Hey, great to have you on, Mark, as always. It's always a pleasure. You always come up with great, great insights into the game of baseball. We'll talk next week. Talk about some of these plans that baseball has if they resume. I want to get your thoughts on that next week as well. But thanks for being with us. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you then.
You got it.
All right. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, Sports Info Solutions. More coming up, KNBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.